From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made nearly 40 years ago in towns across America, where teenagers spent their summers scooping ice cream, bagging groceries, watching beaches as lifeguards on duty. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 1978 was the year the summer employment rate peaked for teenagers in this country, with 72% of Americans ages 16 to 19 either working or looking for jobs. Last year, only 43% of teenagers were active on the summer job market. So how did summer jobs lose their status as a rite of passage for teenagers? Some adults say today's teenagers are lazy or unmotivated. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, for example, is among those who say we need to bring back work as sort of a culture. But some say that criticism is unfair. The data shows teens' priorities have changed. Instead of making money, many are focused on making connections through internships and building their resumes for college. And they're also facing some new competition in the workplace. So let's talk about all of these factors and what's next for teens on the job market. I'd like to welcome our guests in studio. Antoine Williams is the Director of Youth Services at Rochester Works. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
Also here is Eleanor Leno, a Brighton High School graduate and an incoming freshman at the University of Rochester. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Probably an exciting time of your life.
I'm really excited about it.
And great to have you. Thank you for being here, Eleanor.
No problem.
And Simon Leno is a Brighton High School graduate, an incoming freshman at Carnegie Mellon University, and the more likable twin.
Oh, wow.
What?
I'm mostly kidding.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Evan.
it's really a pleasure now.
I'm not sure how Eleanor feels about that. But
I'm a little insulted, but...
Eleanor, I read the full profile that Simon sent.
Oh, I didn't read it. So.
Welcome to both of you. Thank you. And congratulations, honestly, to both of you. Just recently minted graduates. And just real briefly, I want to start with Antoine, and then we're going to talk to Eleanor and Simon about, you know, their experience in the decisions they made this summer, in recent summers, about whether to work, whether you look for internships, whether you do other things, what colleges are thinking about. But Antoine, sort of largely speaking, let's go back almost 40 years versus today. That's a huge change. 72% to 43% of 16 to 19-year-olds either working or looking for summer jobs here. Yeah, I imagine that doesn't surprise you necessarily, but how do you feel about that change in a generation?
Yeah, it's very interesting, but you know, just kind of speaking of today, just through the Rochester Works Summer Youth Employment Program in collaboration with the City of Rochester, we put out an application back in February, and over 3,000 applied. So to say that young people are not interested, I beg to differ.
Mm-hmm.
So, and unfortunately, we only have, you know, due to funding, slots available for, you know, 700 youth. So there are lots of young people out there who are interested and who are looking. It's just a matter of having an opportunity.
Okay, so in some ways, I wonder how exactly we're counting not only who's working, but, quote, looking for work. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're in that pool of 3,000 and you're taking 700,
mm-hmm.
you know, you got 2,300, are they immediately not looking for work anymore? Do they look elsewhere? But do you get the sense that 16 to 19-year-olds or young adults mm-hmm. are interested in work if they can find it? Is there a concern that they're expressing that there's not work out there? What are you hearing?
Funny you say that. Well, for those who know me, I'm always getting Antoine, my son or my daughter's looking for work. So I think that in the community, folks, the young people are interested in work.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times they just don't know where to start. You know, thanks to technology, folks are hiding behind their cell phones and whatnot, not realizing that they have to get out there and hit the pavement in order to make that connection.
The Atlantic Monthly covered this story titled The Disappearance of the Summer Job, and they tried to address the question of why fewer teens are working in a number of ways. They say some students have to go to summer school. Some have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them, that might not be an option. More have to go to summer school than maybe a generation ago. They're staying in school longer. They're going to college more often. And they're taking more summer classes or doing unpaid internships, which mm-hmm. could probably be its own discussion.
Right.
The subject of internships, paid versus unpaid. I know it can be controversial. Big... Wow, the Lenos have big sort of smiles on there with some grimaces on their faces. You know, for you, Antoine, you know, when it comes to that question for, let's say you've got a 16 or 17-year-old
mm-hmm.
who's thinking about a lot of different things. Number one, working during the summer to help support a family or pay their own bills.
Yep.
Also thinking about, I've got to get into a school. Hey, I got a chance to do some kind of shadowing or internship, but it's not going to pay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's probably a lot when it comes to that calculation. And, if an internship is unpaid, I understand the push-pull that they have about whether I take it or not.
Right. I have not come across anyone, any young person who preferred an unpaid internship over paid internship. So I'm not sure about that piece. But I will say that a lot of the young people who go through our program, a lot of them are in summer school. And so we worked it, whereas the employers that we are working with, you know, start programming or employment after 12 o'clock. So realizing that, I don't know, a third of the young people in Rochester actually do go to summer schools, we've adjusted our hours in order to meet their needs.
Now, we may be hearing about the decline in teens getting summer jobs at the national level, but according to the Democrat and Chronicle, the numbers locally are growing, which kind of reflects what Antoine is saying there. A demand among teenagers locally to work, and also efforts from Rochester Works and others to try to find ways for them to have those opportunities.
Correct.
According to the DNC, the number of teens in the labor force has been trending about 10 percentage points higher than the national average. And Simon and Eleanor, you know, I'll start with you guys here. Let's go back. First job, what was the first summer job for you, Eleanor?
I worked at a bakery stand at the Brighton Farmers Market called John John's Bakery 2 summers ago. And I didn't have a summer job last year because I was doing a theater camp. But basically the job composed of some customer service. I just sold baked goods. It was fun.
Okay. Simon, first summer job for you?
I worked at Ray Case Floors, which is a flooring company that is now based in Fairport, New York. And, you know, we would go around all over the greater Rochester area installing floors, et cetera, et cetera. You know, for the exact same reason that Eleanor couldn't get a job last summer, I couldn't as well. We both go to this theater camp in Vermont every year, and it's sort of become a tradition. And we're sort of doing that just for fun. So yeah, that was my first job.
And according to The Atlantic, another reason that fewer teens are working is that some students and some of their parents view extracurricular activities during the summer, so often related to sports, often related to theater or music, as a kind of job, not just because they like to do it, but it improves chances of getting scholarships, it improves chances of getting into certain colleges. Was that a consideration for you?
That was definitely a consideration. I mean, for me, I'm actually not a theater kid. I'm a musician by trade. I'm going to Carnegie Mellon to double major. I'm double majoring in tuba and something else. So I'm a tuba player. And this year I decided to go to the Rafael Mendez Brass Institute in Denver. It's run by the former tuba player of the New York Philharmonic, among other very prestigious tuba players. And so for me, in the music world, really the way you you make, by making connections, you really establish yourself in the world and you gain notoriety. And I think in that regard, I mean, if it weren't for the connections that my teacher had to some people, I don't think that, you know, if people didn't know who my teacher was, who I studied with, Craig Sutherland of the Rochester Philharmonic, and people know the Rochester Philharmonic, right? I wouldn't have gotten into some of the places that I did because I'm just, you know, I'm a decent tuba player, but I'm definitely not the best. So I just find connections to be immensely important in my book, and so that's one of the reasons why I'm attending this camp, so I can sort of build my resume to become a professional musician.
Okay. Eleanor, what about your mentality that when it comes to what you do during the summer, how much is a consideration toward how much was and is, you know, college, getting in, building a resume, those kinds of things?
So I think for me, building a resume is more important during the school year. I would do things like Model UN and things like that, not just to build a resume, but also to have fun, obviously. It's pretty important to have fun as well. But over the summer, the theater is mostly a tradition. It wasn't so much to build a resume, but it was a little bit. But I would say this summer, I decided to work to earn some savings for college, which is pretty important because I don't want to have an empty bank account in college.
Okay. And so, again, this summer you're doing what?
I am working at Great Harvest at 12 Corners. It's a bakery, and we make fresh bread every day. It's pretty good.
Now, Ben Sasse is a senator from Nebraska, a Republican whose new book, it's one of those rare books by a politician that isn't necessarily about policy, about running for office, though Time magazine says It sure is about running for office. It's about setting himself up for a 2020 challenge of Donald Trump. But Senator Sasse, his book is called The Disappearing American Adult. And I'm sorry, The Vanishing American Adult. And in The Vanishing American Adult, he writes about the value of work. And one of the things that Senator Sasse talks about was trying to ingrain in his own kids a sense of the value of work and even making them suffer a little. And producer Megan Mack, what was the job he had his 14-year-old daughter doing? It's just an example. She turns 14, and I think he sent her away for the summer to do some kind of, oh, to deliver calves, to deliver baby cows at a ranch, calves at a ranch.
That's so Nebraska.
So you're 14, and it's time to do some actual manual labor, and yeah, suffer a little and understand the value of work to gain a sense of appreciation, because he's concerned that when he jumps on Twitter, Senator Sasse sees young adults in their young 20s using terms like adulting. And like, like, I bought milk for myself, hashtag adulting. And he's going, oh my gosh, where are the actual adults out there? Why are we celebrating buying milk? And so what he does in his own family, he says, you're going to learn the value of work, and summer may not be fun, and you may not need it actual in terms of money. We may be well off, but you're doing it anyway. Eleanor, what do you think of that?
I think that is very true. And one of the things my dad actually told me when I was looking for jobs was, you need to experience the real world, not necessarily like a long-term job, but a job that's going to work you really hard so you can know what some people need to do to survive. And what basically the kind of job I have is something that I can get because I have because I'm high school level. I don't have a college education yet. Mm-hmm. So my dad was talking about getting a job like this as kind of a motivator to get through college so you don't have to do repetitive tasks over and over again, and also to kind of gain a toughness of spirit through these kinds of jobs.
Okay, Simon?
Wow, okay, I'm beginning to feel really guilty about this.
Why guilty?
Well, you know, I feel like, you know, right now I'm really at this sort of crossroads where I really need to start making decisions about the finances in my life. So obviously college is not cheap. I'm going to a private university. That's very expensive. Not only that, but I just got my first debit card. So like, I'm, you know, all these, you know, big transitions in my life. And I feel like it would be good if I just had earned at least some pocket money in order to support that. And especially as a musician, it's a really expensive profession that doesn't pay a lot of profits, pay a lot of revenue. So, you know, you're getting like, you have to buy these $10,000 instruments when you're getting paid pennies sometimes. So I feel like I'm sort of caught between that, where on one hand I can go to these camps, which are usually quite expensive for that matter, to really improve my playing, or do I want to be more financially well off and get a full-time job over the summer and really save up for, say, getting a new tuba or buying some equipment that I need. So it's this real sort of catch-22 situation that a lot of musicians are facing right now, especially classical musicians, as sort of the popularity of the medium is sort of declining.
And before I turn back to Antoine, I just want to follow up with both of you, because I happen to know both of your parents, not necessarily very well, but you know, very smart. You know, it's a wonderful family. And Eleanor, you really are, despite Simon, you are a wonderful family. And so Eleanor, you know, you were touching on something there, that you, that conversation with your father, that he wanted to instill the value of work in a way that it sounded like he was worried that you might not have. And do you have a sense for privilege and thinking about it in those ways that says, look, I mean, I could probably go to college and get away with not doing some of those jobs. I don't necessarily come from a family that has scraped and struggled. And how important do you think a recognition of that privilege is?
I think it's very important to recognize privilege like that. We're not exposed to a lot of different people's lifestyles and different classes. And I think working in a variety of jobs, especially when you're younger, is a great way to realize and recognize your privilege. I'm definitely privileged in that I can say that this job is temporary and I'm going to be going to university next year, but not everybody can say that. And I think it's good to have a job no matter what the job is. And as long as you're working hard, it's a noble thing. And it's good to recognize your privilege in that mentality.
Simon, what do you think?
I completely agree. I think when it comes to me, like I'm currently sort of exerting a privilege in that I am not working. I have chosen not to work and instead to go to these camps. And so that was a conscious choice. You know, it's interesting. My father sat me down and he had a different conversation with me than he did with Eleanor. He told me, right now what you should concentrate on is improving yourself as a musician. But, you know, at the same time, you know, there's, you know, obviously there's some like interfamily conflict. Like my mother has sat me down at the same time and saying, you know, you should think about getting a job next summer. So I think there's definite value in getting a job, obviously. So it's definitely a choice that I'm going to need to make down the road. And obviously, you know, you do get sort of an introduction to sometimes you get an introduction to diversity of opinion. I remember when I was working in the Fuller Company, there were, you know, not necessarily like the type of person that I would usually interact with in Brighton, which is, you know, obviously suburban. They were the sort of NRA type. You know, they would talk about, you know, going to the gun conference and stuff like that. And
you don't hear a lot of that in Brighton.
You don't hear a lot. I think
never.
I don't think firearms are even a thing in Brighton, but.
I know one person, but.
But, you know, the whole deal is that's just sort of another angle on it where, you know, you get introduced to another.
It sounds like you're admitting that there's a little bit of a bubble, and getting outside the bubble is not necessarily a bad thing.
I think anytime you can get outside any bubble, it's great.
Okay. So, all right. So listeners, I would love to hear from you what you think about summer jobs. Did you work in the summer? Are kids working in the summer in your family? What's the value of that? And again, I think what we're hearing from the Leneaus is one angle. Then there's the angle that they recognize that they're not necessarily working because they have to, you know, just scrape by, but there's different values here. So 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. A lot fewer teenagers, 16 to 19, are working in this country than a generation ago, than about 40 years ago. 1978, the number peaked. About 72% of 16 to 19-year-olds were working or trying to work during the summer, and now it's about 43%. It's a little higher locally, but still it's a lot lower than about a generation ago. And Antoine Williams from Rochester Works, one of the other things that Senator Sasse talks about in his book that rubs some people the wrong way is it's at least an implied idea that teens are lazier today. Now, yeah, I know Antoine's got a big smile because he says, "Let me hit that pinata." but maybe that's not fair. And if Ben Sasse comes on this program, and Senator, you're welcome anytime. Maybe that's too much of a generalization. But I think it's this idea that the culture of work has changed in young people, generally speaking. So whether you want to say lazy or a culture of work has changed, what do you think, Antoine?
Right. You know, I don't like, you know, taking the broad brush and, you know, making a stroke. Are there some lazy folks out there? No question about it. I mean, that's society as a whole. But then you have the other half who, like I said, who are willing and eager. But then let's not forget about those who just don't know or who may come from a household where, you know, it may be a single parent household. Mom or dad is not working. So they don't know what it's like to get up, to have to go to work. You know, that's something that has to be modeled, you know, per se. Speaking from personal experience, even though I come from a single parent household, I witnessed my dad every single day getting up to go to work. You know, to me, employment equals self-sufficiency. So to see him do it on a day-to-day basis, that's why I'm where I'm at today as a result of that.
All right. So it's one thing to assume that any teen who's not working or isn't maybe in the rhythm of work mm-hmm. is lazy. It's another to say, what are the circumstances? What's right. going on in our communities?
Exactly.
And for, let's talk about teenagers who maybe don't have that exact kind of modeling that you saw. Mm-hmm. What are the services out there? How are we going to reach out and make sure that they know that there are opportunities, that they can work?
Oh, there's a plethora, especially in Rochester. There's almost a program at every corner as it relates to, you know, youth development. So whether it's through the schools, through Rochester Works, these cell phones, you know, all they have to do is just Google employment opportunities in Rochester and a plethora of stuff will come up. Yeah, Rochester Works. I mean, throughout the year, we are there to connect, educate, train, and connect individuals to employment opportunities. So regardless of age, you have to be at least 14 to obtain a work permit. So as long as you have a work permit and You could be 80. If you're looking for a job opportunity, you know, you don't know where to start. You don't have a resume. You don't know how to interview. Come down to Rochester Works.
And you mentioned those 3,000 teenagers who wanted 700 positions. What were the kind of jobs we're talking about there?
Okay, so we're funding a slew of programs that will provide in-house career exploration to the 14, 15-year-olds. And just to give you some example of, you know, those programs, you're looking at, you know, entrepreneurship, culinary, hospitality, information technology, multimedia production, and the list goes on. Those are our programs. In terms of employers, there's about 40 employers that we're working with, two of the largest, Unity Health and RGH, which, you know, in the hospital, there's a ton of different job opportunities. So whether it's grounds, whether it's culinary, working in the kitchen, we're making that connection.
And 700 is the number for this year, right?
700.
I mean, those are great opportunities.
It is. And, you know, but it's still a drop in the bucket. You know, at the end of the day, it's still a drop in the bucket when you look at the number that apply. Mm-hmm. It's very competitive. Our process is that of the real world. So it's easy to go online. That's the first step, to go online and apply. But after that, you have to follow through. So dropping off the supporting documentation, going to the appointments, coming to the job fair. You know, these are things that the young people have to do, parent orientation, because if they fail to meet one of those guidelines, then they're kicked out of the system. So even though 3,000 may apply, you can almost cut that number in half in terms of those who follow through.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And as you say, 700 getting those jobs is a drop in the bucket. But I want to be careful with this kind of a question, but I do think it's relevant here because the Atlantic article in the Atlantic Monthly on the disappearing summer job touches on this. We touched on it last hour. It's the question on the impact of a rising minimum wage. And anecdotally, when I talk to restaurant owners who hire summer servers, I talk to, you know, small business owners, I often hear concern, this is just anecdotally, that as the minimum wage rises, I don't know if I can hire as many young people, et cetera, et cetera. This new study that's really more of a working paper, not peer-reviewed, but getting a lot of attention out of Seattle, indicates that in Seattle specifically, as the minimum wage has made its way toward $15 an hour, you see a little less total employment and fewer hours offered. And there's this idea that, you know, employers might resist that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Rochester Works takes a position on that or if you have any feelings on that, Antoine.
Unfortunately, I don't have the crystal ball, but I can see how that can, you know, how that could be a potential issue. We see it now in terms of where you have technology replacing people. You know, you no longer need someone behind the counter to order your meal. You could press a couple buttons. But even prior to that, you know, as a result of things tightening up, when you used to go to a, let's say, a restaurant, you know, you saw young people. But as a result of the economy being the way it is, now you're seeing, you know, some of the jobs that were offered to younger people are now being offered to the older people. And now, soon, real soon, if not now, you know, those jobs are being taken over by technology. And then with the increase of minimum wage, you know, yeah, we shall see.
Well, let me ask Simon and Eleanor before we get our only break of the hour. I saw them flinch at a couple of things that they haven't had a chance to weigh in on. Simon, the general contention that this generation of teenagers is quote-unquote lazier than previous generations, or as Senator Sass might say, less sort of incorporated into the culture of work. What would you say?
Well, with all due respect to Senator Sass and other members of the Republican Party, I'd beg to differ. you know, I will be speaking of unpaid internships. I did intern at the local Democratic Committee last summer, so you know, my opinion isn't plain here. But I think us as a generation, we are working harder in some ways than many of the other previous generations. And I don't mean this as a detriment to Generation X, to the baby boomers. But the reality is they grew up in a period where there was a lot of entitlement. And, you know, I think that in some ways there's we don't have those entitlements. And I know this is a very controversial statement, so I think I'm gonna sort of step back a bit because I really
play dead, man. Play dead.
Yeah, because I don't want boomers going after me. I love I love the baby boomer generation, guys.
My dad's a baby boomer.
Okay. All right. No, point made. Eleanor, do you want to follow up on that?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I think that the definition of lazy needs to be questioned. Some people might think it's lazy to sit at a computer all day, computer programming, but it's not lazy because it's tough on your brain and you're doing... You're working it hard, and there's different ways to work hard that may seem lazy to other people when in reality they're actually quite intellectually stimulating. Some people will think that playing video games all the time is lazy, but the manner in which you play video games it depends, you know.
The manner in which I play video games is lazy.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a little honesty.
But I would say that the majority of my friends aren't lazy. Just in terms of my bubble, as we were talking about, almost everybody looked for jobs. I think there's different ways to define laziness.
I know people from all over the place, thanks to youth orchestra and whatnot, you know, from the Rochester City School District, from Webster, from Penfield, from Pittsford. And, you know, they're working at places like Seabreeze, Village Bakery, just for example. I mean, like, I was just out to lunch for my friend and she asked for a job application there. So, you know, I think what we do is, you know, if we like the idea of working somewhere, like, for example, if you're at, you know, say Mount Hope Diner and you're like, oh, this would be kind of cool to be on the wait staff here, then you just ask for an application and then see where it takes you from there. And I think just the fact that, like, in this age where it's so ridiculously competitive. You know, for college acceptance rates are at an all-time low. Our need to build our resume is sort of overshadowing our need for a job. And my personal belief is that it's unfortunate because...
sure, absolutely.
Just anecdotally, I know I have a friend who got into Yale and so many people are asking her, what did you do to get into Yale? And she said, I just did what I wanted to do. You know, she's working a job right now. So I don't see people sort of need to step back for a second and consider, okay, what's going to make my child the most prepared for the workforce when they enter it as an adult? And that might be an internship. That might be a summer job. So it's just something you need to consider.
But unfortunate in your mind that we're addicted to this idea of how do we get in? What are your standardized test score? Are you studying enough? Is your resume fitting every little perfect thing? As opposed to saying, okay, if you're going to work this summer and not feel like, oh my gosh, I'm falling behind.
I will say this. I've spoken to admissions officers from many different colleges, and they say that if you have a summer job, that shows evidence of commitment. That shows mm-hmm. evidence of proactivity. And that might do more than, you know, say, you know, like an 800 on your SAT subject test. I don't know. But I think, you know, I think that shows like sort of that sets you apart from other kids. Definitely.
Okay. Well, I'm late for our only break of the hour. I got to get this break in. We're going to come back. We're going to hear from a school counselor who is going to weigh in on this issue, on the pressure on kids and the opportunities that are out there. We'll take some of your phone calls as well on this subject as we talk about, well, what The Atlantic calls the disappearing summer jobs. It's not fully disappeared. Rochester Works is telling us there are jobs, and hopefully there are more out there for teenagers who want them. So let's get that break. Come right back here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, the Trump administration's proposed budget cuts have left a lot of people concerned about the future of a number of programs, after-school programs. You probably heard Meals on Wheels. While a local group says political leaders need to better understand the value of these programs, we'll talk myths and realities. In our second hour, local disability rights advocate Stephanie Woodward was arrested while protesting the Senate health care bill on Thursday. She joins us in studio to talk about that experience. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Hearing from a lot of listeners pushing back on some of the narrative about teenagers these days. And I want to get to your phone calls and emails coming up. Donna in Fairport, Arlene in Rochester, hanging there on the phone. But I want to welcome Desiree Rouse, who is a counselor at Greece Olympia High School, for a few minutes to kind of weigh in with some perspective as well. Desiree, thanks for joining the program. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, why don't you give us a sense for what you're hearing from students who are thinking about summer work, but also thinking about what they're, you know, what they might need to be doing either for their families or for their resumes, thinking about school, thinking about everything that kind of goes into these calculations. What's kind of the landscape you're seeing?
Right. So I was listening to just before the break, what some of the kids were saying, and I think some of our students don't really have the luxury of deciding, should I work or do I want to do an internship? Some of our kids have to work if they want to pay their cell phone bill or buy clothes so they can wear clothes. And a lot of our family, or a lot of our kids are helping their families out around the house and paying for some like food and things like that. So some of our kids definitely are choosing to work and because they have to. And a lot of our kids, too, are choosing when they do go to college to stay close to home so that they can work while going to MCC or going to Brockport and commuting. So our kids, at least, are trying to work. They just not always are able to find a job.
And I thought Simon Leneau made an important point right before the break, and I'd like you to follow up on that, Desiree. You know, he talked about, you know, how it's unfortunate that, you know, some students might feel this pressure to put together kind of a perfect resume as opposed to working at times, if it's a luxury that they can afford to do that, and whether colleges might, you know, be sort of wise to start putting more value on summer work, or maybe they do. How do you think colleges weigh work experiences versus extracurriculars, camps, internships, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. So the college admissions reps that we speak with, and again, we don't have, I don't speak with a ton of counselors from the more selective colleges, mm-hmm. but we do have students who apply, and we speak a lot with counselors from University of Rochester, and then we speak with University of SUNY Brockport and St. John Fisher College and more of the local colleges, and they do weigh any kind of extracurricular activities in on that. So I think he mentioned, you know, some they do look at it as, okay, you have a job that's showing commitment, that's showing that you're committed to something, and the reps are telling us that, yes, that does count. You know, you are busy, that is keeping you busy, that's doing something that's benefiting you, and so they do count that, I guess, towards their decision.
Desiree, here's a comment from Michael on Twitter. He says, when I was 13 to 18, I ran my own lawn mowing business. Can't really do that today. He says, there's competition from people supporting their families, and it doesn't always look good on a CV. He says, if it's all about college, when do teens learn about soft skills? Well, the Atlantic Monthly says on soft skills, there are several studies that show summer jobs for teens pay a long-term dividend in higher earnings and reduce crime long-term in our society. So soft skills can be, so working summer jobs could have a lot of other benefits as well. Do you see it that way?
Yes, I agree with that. I think that as schools, we try and help students build those soft skills, but then being out in the workforce helps you build those soft skills as well. Dealing with people, being able to use a fax machine, let's say, even though I guess fax is a little bit outdated, so I need to know how old
I am. We still have one.
But things like that, absolutely. I think that there's more value to jobs than just your paycheck. Absolutely.
Okay. And a Stanford University study finds that summer jobs can help boost classroom performances for students of all socioeconomic backgrounds. Do you also see that, Desiree?
I think that in my experiences, any time a student is busy or a teenager is busy, it helps to keep them on a schedule, which we have seen the more involved you are, the better your grades are, because you then have to kind of coordinate your time and figure out, okay, when am I going to get my homework done? When am I going to do this? I need to get this done. And it definitely helps with that and to build the responsibility. I mean, just even myself, when I have free time, I put things off and put things off. But when I'm scheduled and I know I have to get something done before I have to go to the next thing, I get it done because I know there's no time later. And I think our kids who are involved in work and who also participate in sports and other activities, they tend to do better in their classes because they're kind of forced to.
All right, Desiree, I'll let you go after one more question here.
Okay.
Antoine Williams, Director of Youth Services at Rochester Works, told us earlier this hour that, you know, he takes some issue with this idea that teenagers are less interested in working, or, you know, that the gap is that big from 1978 when teen summer work peaked to today, based on what he's seeing at Rochester Works, for example. And that, yes, there are some teenagers who will come in with less of a background on work, a lot to learn, but still a desire and a need to do that. Mm-hmm. And the question is, are there going to be jobs and openings for them? What can you, you know, how do you characterize what's out there when it comes to sort of supply and demand that you're seeing?
I will say, actually, Rochester Works, I had several students this year come and had to fill out forms for them to, because they were working with Rochester Works to help them get jobs. So I thought that was pretty cool. A few years ago, I would say I had a lot of students who were unable to find jobs, And I feel like that number has gone down. I have many, it seems, and I don't keep records, so I apologize, I don't have actual statistics, but it seems like a lot more of my kids are working and are having success when they're looking for jobs and finding them. And I actually spoke with our secretary who does the work permits, completes the work permits for our students, and she said we had so many more this year than in past years. So a lot more of our kids are out there looking, and I think that more of them are finding success based on what they're telling me.
Desiree Rouse is a counselor at Greece Olympia High School. Really appreciate your perspective. Thanks for joining the program today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
All right, I want to get back to your phone calls, so let me jump to Arlene in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Arlene.
Yes, great afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the things that I wanted to highlight is the Rochester Works, that's a very successful program, is called Strings for Life. And what this program does is Chuck Campbell from the Campbell Brothers teaches the students how to play the steel guitar, write music, they publish a CD, and do original works. Along with that, there's a finance component that teaches the students how to handle their money, work with a vision board, networking, and communication skills. It's an all-encompassing program that is really a launching pad that helps students get to the next level. Not just the work, but all the other things that go with it. Awesome, awesome program. And this will be its third year. Great success.
Arlene, thank you for the phone call. Antoine, you want to respond to that?
I like it, and thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
The state, we were monitored maybe about 2 years ago, and that was one of the programs that we took the state monitor to. And it was the first year that we didn't have it was such a fluffy email that came back to us without any findings. And so, you know, when you're funding a great program where the young people can tell you and share their experiences without having the program coordinator step in and overshadow things.
Okay, Arlene, thank you for the phone call there. Let me go out to Fairport. This is Donna next on the phone. Go ahead, Donna.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is, I have a 14-year-old son, and my comment is that what I've observed in other families is that a lot of children who are a part of families who have a choice whether they work or not, they're just overprogrammed with school. And I have friends who have a child, and they work maybe one day a week, you know, for 4 hours at Wegmans, which is, you know, one of the greatest employers for our youth here in Rochester. But I really believe that a summer job, when I was growing up, it gives you so many more skills than you're going to get by being on the varsity swim team or, you know, participating in some club at school. I just, you know, it teaches you the hard work, which is about getting along with people who are different from you and doing stuff that you don't like, because as in my career in 25 years, you know, every job entails doing work that you don't like. And that, you know, takes persistence and tolerance and grit to their skills that I think benefit long-term over the teenager's life.
Donna, thank you. In fact, some of Donna's comments elicited a visceral reaction from the Leno twins. Simon, I saw you especially when Donna brought up the idea of over-programming. How do you feel about that?
Wow, over-programming. Yeah, so I totally understand this. I think one of the issues that we sort of haven't touched on is not just like getting a job, but also keeping one, because this is where over-programming comes into play. You know, I'm sure Mr. Williams can speak to whether or not, you know, with the Rochester Works program, whether, you know, how flexible the scheduling needs to be. But everybody's doing so much now, and this everybody's doing so much. And what's happening is that people aren't able to work as much anymore. And so once you aren't able to work a certain amount, you're going to become a drain to the profits of, you know, wherever you're working. Mm-hmm. And then you might be let go, which is an issue. So you also need to sort of set aside an appropriate amount of time for scheduling.
Okay, Eleanor?
I think this all goes back to privilege in a way. There are certain schools that offer more challenging classes and more homework. For example, Simon and I are from Brighton High School, where there are dozens of APs available. And personally, this year I took 4 APs, which was a big load, and a couple of honors classes. And with that, I had probably 4 to 5 hours of homework a night, so I didn't even consider applying for a job during the year. It's definitely a burden, and it's hard for people to keep jobs, as Simon was saying, and find jobs with that kind of workload. It's insane. And back to the whole resume building thing, not only is it, kids our age find it important to maintain our grades, but it's so hard to have a job in addition to, during the school year, to our hours and hours of homework and doing appropriate extracurricular activities to build the resume. So I think it's difficult.
Let me also bring this back to some of what we read about in the Atlantic Monthly's article that I think highlights and really crystallizes that divide of privilege that Eleanor is talking about here. Imagine you're from a low-income family, and summer work is something that you've got to do. You know, work whenever you can is something that you have to do. Now imagine you're in a wealthier suburban area. I go back in my own mind, my own experience that connects to what the article is saying. First of all, when I was a summer camp counselor, that's what I did for a number of summers. I worked at a summer camp on down in Chautauqua Lake. It's amazing how many parents today, when I go back and visit the camp and talk to the director, parents don't like free time. We had a free time block in the afternoon. I loved free time. You know, sometimes I'd listen to music. Sometimes I'd sit down with my guitar and some other campmates. Sometimes we'd play soccer. But it was free time. It was a block of an hour in the afternoon to do whatever you want. And now parents complain to the camp. What are you doing with free time? You got to structure that time. You got to structure that. Everything's got to be structured. My twin brother, so I'm also a twin. Ooh. And thankfully, there's not one, like a carbon copy of me. The world doesn't need more of that. But my twin brother runs, in my view, a brilliant program, does child care development services for, I would say, for pretty wealthy families in Connecticut, and does a lot of different things. But one thing that he does is help fill time, because parents don't want unstructured free time, even at home, for the kids. It has to be, it's like they have to have a structure every day. What are they doing from 3 to 4? How about 4 to 5? Just playtime isn't good enough for a lot of families, and it tends to be wealthier families, tends to be more suburban families, not exclusively, but that tends to be the case. Mm-hmm. Because there's this idea that unstructured free time is somehow a waste, when we know that that is not true, but there's this pressure. Think about kids who are playing travel sports. Well, you used to play in a travel sports league. Well, now you got to be in three, because if you're in just one, mm-hmm. your classmates are in a second league. Now they're in a third league. And so, parents, you're listening to me. You know that you've spent a Saturday getting up at 6 a.m., and then you got a game at noon, and then you got another game at 4 p.m.
Ridiculous.
All in the same day. So whether it's sports or camps or just regular structured afternoon summertime, I think the wealthier we get, and often the more suburban, but not always, the more there is pressure. And then you contrast that to kids who just have to work, and they don't have the luxury of playing in three sports leagues or having this, you know, perfectly structured time that looks good on a resume, but may not actually be good for them. And I find that divide to be troubling in a lot of different ways. And Antoine, I mean, you relate to that? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, there's only 24 hours in a day, you know, and we do need structure, okay, in the household, because in society there is structure. So we have to learn how to, from a young age, learn how to play by the rules, so to speak. But this notion of, you know, not having any free time, you need that time to decompress and to process, you know, what's been going on in your life and how you should be reacting to things. Mm-hmm. But to go, you know, from one extracurricular activity to another, I mean, eventually you're going to crack. And we see that all the time. You know, a lot of people on medication because they're overstimulated.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, Simon, Eleanor, you know, you're really well-balanced young adults now. But there has to be a time in your high school experience where you felt that, you know, where Antoine's saying eventually kids are going to crack. Now, maybe you graduated and felt like you handled it pretty well. But did you experience that in groups around you, that pressure, Eleanor?
I certainly did. I actually did crack maybe 3 times a year. So I had
What is cracking to you?
Cracking means breaking down on your bed and sobbing because you have 6 hours of homework. You have 3 essays, 4 packets, and a Model UN paper to write, and then just crying. I think it's not healthy. We need to have free time, as you said. Free time is a good thing, and I know that this talk isn't about homework, but homework does fill up free time, and I know from my experience, I know quite a few parents who would come in to talk to my teachers and demand more homework because they weren't assigning enough. And these, oftentimes, these parents were from wealthier income households. Mm-hmm. And seemed to be a trend, and they would demand that they assign more homework to occupy our free time, which I was never a big fan of because I do a fair amount of extracurriculars, violin, Model UN, all these things. So yes, I did crack a couple times.
Sure, Simon.
You know, I think I'm about to make amends with the baby boomers here. You know, back when they were kids, it used to be that you were able to just play outside. You know, you could just meet up with people in the neighborhood, like across the street, and play outside. And, you know, that in a sense was another way in which people sort of suffered pain. You know, back in the days of asphalt playgrounds and everything, you'd fall down, you'd break a bone, you know, you'd get your cast. Right. So I think in that regard, like we don't play outside anymore. It's a combination of being overworked. The effects of technology,
fear, lack of trust.
I think fear on the part of the parents. I think fear on the part of the children as well.
Isn't this interesting? We're turning Senator Sass's thesis on its head a little. It's not necessarily that kids are lazy. It's that parents might not, you know, trust kids to have free time or to work or to do certain things. Here's an email I want to read from a listener named Rebecca who says, I was a teenager in the 90s and I babysat kids all the time. I grew up in Geneva, so I grew up in a smaller place with a little bit of that everybody knows everybody vibe. I babysat for neighbors, for extended family, for my mom's coworkers, for strangers who got my name from friends who usually babysat for them but were busy that night. No one asked for my credentials about my experience. They just assumed I could handle it. I started babysitting around maybe 14, and parents didn't have cell phones back then. So here's the difference. I now live in Geneva. I'm the mom to a six-year-old, and the only people who have babysat my son are my mom, my best friend, and my aunt. End of list. I think culturally, speaking very generally, mm-hmm. adults might have stopped trusting teenagers the way they did in the past.
Oh, I completely agree. I think also with babysitting specifically, it used to sort of be a something that you could make money very easily from. But now that there's more concern about children, I think that there's more concern about babysitting as an extension. I know Eleanor is a certified babysitter. So, you know, like you go through this Red Cross certification, which obviously is another sort of, you know, sort of taker away of free time. You know, if you want a lifeguard, then you need to be certified as a lifeguard. If you want to be a delivery boy, you got to learn to drive, which, you know, some people just aren't learning to drive. It's a generational shift.
Yeah, Amy in Hemlock writes to us to say, ultimately, it's not about kids. It's about the parents. It is our job to prepare our kids to face life and work. And work is life whether they need money at that moment. Our teen was not given a choice to work or not work. However, he benefits from the money he makes for spending, and the rest goes towards a music summer camp and a trip overseas. It's not optional, and he's learning, he's working towards the fun stuff. I'm all for kids enjoying their summer, but working 3 to 4 hours a day is just as important in life lessons. That comes from Amy and Hemlock. Thank you, Amy. So let's, as we start to close the program, let's get some final thoughts here. Antoine, from you, again, the Director of Youth Services at Rochester Works. We've talked about summer work and the decline in summer work and some of the pushback on that idea mm-hmm. from a number of different angles. And I think what I really appreciate is I think Eleanor and Simon are so impressive, not only for who they are as young adults, but also their perspective, understanding privilege and seeing that. And not everybody comes from the same background. What's your message for the community when it comes, especially for parents mm-hmm. who are thinking about kids, thinking about summer opportunities? And I know we're already almost into July here, mm-hmm. but what would you say about those future considerations for work, especially for parents or kids who might think, well, there's nothing out there?
Oh, there's something out there. We just have to go old school where it's all about, you know, the first impression. It's about attitude. It's about flexibility. So, okay, no longer hiding behind technology to do the networking, but really getting out there into the neighborhoods and or in the community to knock on doors, to talk to, you know, the restaurants, to Seabreeze, to whoever, to say, I'm looking for employment opportunity. You know, to me, it's as simple as that. That's what I did growing up. I didn't wait for opportunity to come knock on the door. I went and sought it out, you know. And I think that's what's lacking today. I think a lot of people don't understand that networking aspect. You know, the more people you talk to, eventually somebody's going to connect you to an employer.
Everything goes back to every other show this week. This goes back to the Radiohead conversation yesterday, that album from the 1990s, where they were concerned about technology actually making us more isolated. Mm-hmm. And when Antoine's talking about losing networking skills, despite the fact that we're so connected, yep, ostensibly to everything.
Yes.
But you got, that's a skill. That's a skill that you've got to have. Eleanor, some final thoughts from you?
Well, I think it's definitely important to seek things out, whether that be a job or whatever you want to do. That sounds kind of deep, but yeah, definitely getting yourself out there. I definitely agree with the technology aspect. I think it is not connecting us, but rather dividing us in a way. But yeah.
Okay, Simon.
I think proactivity is essential. I'm gonna agree with both Mr. Williams and my sister here in saying that the ultimate issue is obviously technology, but there's also an issue of sort of like what's come with that technology. It's sort of a more concerned generation of adults who are more, you know, crazy, you know, sort of concerned about their parents. So yeah, I think it's a new age and we need to sort of apply ourselves.
Well, some great stuff from all of our panelists, and Antoine Williams especially giving us that message. There's work out there to go find it and go get it, and if you need help with that and getting started, no matter your age or background, Rochester Works is there for you. He's the Director of Youth Services there. Great talking to you. Thanks for being here, Antoine.
Thank you.
And Eleanor and Simon Leneau, Brighton High School graduates, one going to the University of Rochester, another going to Carnegie Mellon. Great luck to you guys, and you don't need luck. You're making your own luck. Nice to have both of you. Thanks for sharing your perspective.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Very good. Our thanks as well to Rob and Braden, the engineer. Thank you, Rob. And Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We're back with you Thursday on Member Supported Public Radio.